Shalom, everyone. I'll continue the reading from here. Is my sound all right? Thanks, God. This is a lecture by Maitreya on the first two seals of the greatest sign. To understand these two seals, we're going to go to the Bible. We're going to interpret the Bible very differently. We're just going to touch some things from the Bible. If you have read Tho, it will be easier for you to understand. Probably, if you haven't read Tho, it's also going to be easy to understand as we go through it. If you have any questions at any time in the presentation, go ahead and ask. And if you get bored, that's your problem. All laughing. We'll try not to bore you. Any questions so far? We'll start from the very beginning of the Bible. It says, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light." Genesis 1:1-3. So the whole universe was in darkness. It was in chaos, there was no form. What happened in the very beginning of creation was that God woke up from a deep sleep after billions of years of no creation. The first thing that happened was that feeling of "I know" was created in the universe, the first manifestation of the mind. Before that, there was no mind. The whole thing was in a state of balance. The consciousness and the three creative forces were not released. They were in a balance. There was no feeling of awareness. It was just in a state of complete blissfulness. But when that awakening happened, which scientists call the Big Bang, the first feeling that came to the consciousness in a millisecond was the feeling of "I know." That is the effect of the sattva guna. Sattva has the feeling of "I know," knownness. The second feeling comes as "I do," I have the ability to do. That is the rajaguna, energy. If there was no energy in the universe, all things would stay where they are forever. I can't move my hand without energy. I have to use energy to move my hand and my lips. My voice is energy. My vocal cords create vibration, which is energy. Everything needs energy to work. So the next feeling is "I do," I have the ability to do. The third feeling is memory, I have done. That is the remembrance. With this happening in these three levels, the unit consciousnesses, which we are, were created in the universe, infinite numbers of them. And each of them have an illusion of separation from the rest of the universe. So these unit consciousnesses are feeling that they are each separate, and they know, they do, and they have done. They have the memory. With this, the whole universe started to be in chaos. Every unit consciousness was following its own will, so it was all going in all different directions. That is where the Bible picks up on creation. And darkness was upon the face of the deep, because there was chaos in the universe. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. What is water? Water is the symbol of consciousness. All through the Bible, water is the symbol for consciousness. If you look in the Revelation, the water became dark and red. What is the water which becomes red? We haven't seen any bloody river on earth, and we know it is the end of the old era. We do see all the signs to indicate that. So what does that mean? That means the consciousness, waters, become crude, bloody. We have so many wars and so much strife on earth. Why? Because the consciousness that are doing these things are bloody, are full of darkness. They say, "No, my religion is better than your religion, so it's good to kill you." And then they say, "Well, there is only one God." How can it be that there is one God who sent a religion better than another religion? If they all come from one God, how can one be better than the other? It can't be done that way. They say, "Religion created more suffering than anything else." The religion didn't create suffering. Humans created suffering by not understanding God and His words. So that is when God decided, "Let there be light." He just had it with all these lost unit consciousnesses, and he projected his light to the universe. And that light, according to our teaching, went through all the seven steps of the eternal divine path. He started meditating on this situation. He realized the effect of the three gunas on humans, how "I know," "I do," and "I have done" creates the different levels of consciousness. If the person is in the state of "I know-ness," he's in sattva. If "I do-ness," he's in raja. If "I have done," the feeling of "I have done this, I have done that, such a great being I am, I have all this memory of doing this," this creates an ego, a separation. He is in tama. With tamaguna, the ego becomes complete. So he went through the first step, the first seal, and he realized the effect of these things. He meditated and realized he understood himself, and he understood the people around him or unit consciousnesses around him. Eventually, he realized, well, the only way to get these people to higher consciousness is to create a good environment. To create a good environment is the second step in the greatest sign. It is the communities of light. And the third is that in order to create such an environment for all these people to progress, you should not be self-centered. You need to sacrifice to be able to give from yourself to these people around you to help them out also with whatever you have in order for them to come to a higher light or the potential they have to become. As some of the unit consciousnesses progressed, he became delighted to say, oh, look at me, I'm doing such a great job. And he became very happy about it. The moment he became happy and started saying, I'm such a great person, I'm doing all these things by myself, he became egoistical. Then he felt separated from God and fell. A couple of unit consciousnesses who were progressing started going away from him, and he then became very upset. Oh, what happened? I thought I was doing such a good job. So he became very upset and discouraged, and he started going up and down, or feeling great when there was some progress, and miserable when he was not successful. Eventually he realized, I'm really not the doer. It is God who is doing it through me. It's the Spirit of the Father who is doing it through me. Then he realized that is the submission, the surrendering. I do the job, I do the work, but I surrender the result to God. I'm not going to take any credit for myself. Anything that I do, I say, okay, don't try to get me involved in this, I'm just a channel. I'm not going to get involved in this and create a big ego for myself and then become separated from God. I'm not the doer. I'm just the channel for Father. He started helping some unit consciousnesses around himself, and they started to progress. They became lighter, more beautiful, and more gracious, and he was very happy. After a while, he saw, look beyond these people. There are infinite unit consciousnesses out there. In the beginning, he was very happy to help just these few people because he had a nice environment for himself. So he became very attached to this little place, like most of us are attached to our friends, or our state, or our city, or our house, or our country, or language, or whatever we have and are comfortable with. It's much more comfortable to stay in a small place which is familiar to us. However, he realized that if you do that, you're going to create separation. You create separation from the rest of the universe. So he eventually realized he had to expand himself out to the universe, and then he became a universalist. He realized, well, God is everything. How can I help only a few people? How can I help only my people, or my country, or my city, or my language, etc.? I have to help the whole universe. That is why we say in the reminder, we adore and promise to endeavor to help the whole universe to reach higher consciousness and eventually pure consciousness. So with this realization, he just expanded his mind, and he completely freed himself of any narrowness of the mind. He became a very dynamic spiritual power or spiritual personality or spiritual being. He reached the sixth seal, so he started helping more people, and eventually reached the point that God saw he was beautiful. He was doing God's will exactly. He was completely freed of his narrowness. He was not taking anything for himself. He was completely free. That's when it reached back to God, and there was light. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. So he became one with the Father again. He was the first begotten Son who reached the light first and before creation was begotten. He was the first one in whom God realized and rejoiced that it can be done. God manifested itself into the universe. He went through the struggle in the manifested universe. He established the eternal divine path and returned to Godhood, pure consciousness, again. He was pleased that, yes, there is hope for the unit consciousnesses. There is a way out. They are not always going to stay in chaos. So with this, the seven steps of the eternal divine path were established in the manifested world. God continued to help unit consciousnesses to reach pure consciousness. But in this level, in the ethereal level, it was very hard for unit consciousnesses to reach pure consciousness. They didn't have any bodies, so they couldn't have any senses to gain experiences. We can have experiences in the body. That is why God decided to create the universe. In the creation, it is much easier to learn because our senses are much keener and our body is much more manifested in this crude environment. That's why this body is a lesson for us. It has a lot of desires, pulls, and wants from which we can learn. We follow our desires, and the more we fulfill our desires, the more we understand that's not it. See, no matter how much you eat, you're going to be hungry tomorrow. No matter how much you drink, you're going to be thirsty in the next couple of hours. No matter how much you go and sit in the sun or swim or how much music you listen to or vacations you go to, etc., next year you want to go again. It doesn't matter how much we do on this earth to fulfill our selfish desires and for this body. It doesn't give us the ultimate satisfaction because the ultimate satisfaction is not there. It's not out of us. It is not out of this body. That's why eventually we realize, what is this? I went through life after life and still have not reached the joy I long to attain. Hey, I've had enough of this. And then we wake up and say, I want something else. I want something better than this. That's enough. I've had enough of that. That's when you look for an answer. You look for something to get you out of this pattern. I don't want to stay in this pattern. I want to go out of it. Then you are guided, of course. As it is said, when you are ready, your teacher will come. Eventually, you will bump into some person who says something that makes sense. No one told me God is everything until I met my teacher, and he said God is everything. That made a lot of sense to me. I was looking for God for the longest time. When I was back in the city where I was living and everyone was talking about God, God does this, God does that, I said, show me, where is this God? What are you talking about? And no one could show me. So I rejected it altogether. I said, you are imagining things. Your mind is imagining this thing and you're just a bunch of crazies. I didn't need it the way they were presenting it to me. A God up there who has no compassion and demands all the time. However, I eventually bumped into this teacher who said, God is everything. Ah, that makes sense, doesn't it? He's everything, so I don't have to look for him any longer, especially not up there. I can look at anything, and it is there. And it was there, because the moment I heard that, I saw him. It was there in everything. It wasn't something up there where I couldn't reach him, and beyond me, a big man sitting up there saying, do this and don't do that, etc. I was looking for something. I knew I was looking for something. That's why I had to go and study about these things, search and find. Of course, I ended up studying all kinds of theories, etc., such as dialectic materialism. They say everything is just by chance. Everything is matter or evolution, according to Darwin. I had to go and study and try to find some answers for my questioning mind. But still, how can everything be by chance? It is something we say but don't understand exactly. What do you mean it happened just by chance? Most of these intellectuals who say it happened by chance really don't think deeply. For instance, we talk about evolution. It is an evolutionary process, or we are healed by medicine, or there is a wound that it is healed by itself. They say, okay, it is healed. They do not question who is the healer. There is something that makes it heal itself. It is the spirit that is in us that makes it heal, not that it gets healed by itself. Anyway, it is then that you start questioning, where do I come from? Where am I going? What is this all about? Then you have had enough of this world. You have had enough of those upside-down questions in your life. That is when the Spirit is going to say, okay, come now, my child. You have had enough of this foolishness. Come to me, and I will guide you. So that is why God created this creation. And he created 6 steps, according to the Bible, 6 days. But if you notice, there is a difference between these days that it talks about as, and the evening and the morning were the first day, second day, third day, etc., and our days of mornings and nights, as mornings and nights. Some people say each of these days mentioned in the Bible are the same as one of our days. However, notice God hadn't created the sun and the moon yet. He created the sun and moon later on. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night. That's in verse 14. Where was the light of the sun and the moon before then? He's not talking about our day here as day and night. Here, day and night are each a period of evolution in creation. He's talking about a period of evolution. That was the evening and the morning of the first day, the period God went through to create the ethereal level and the aerial, liquid, luminous, and solid factors. There are 5 elements in the universe. The manifestation of the universe has 5 levels. Ether, air, luminous or fire, liquid, and solid. The ether is the ethereal factor. Everything in the universe is enveloped in it. That is the first state in creation. It is God's memory. That is what memory actually is. Memory is the ethereal factor. Our memory is in the etheric level of our brain. We call it citta. Citta is that ethereal level that connects us to our spirit. Really, it is ether which creates the different psychic centers in the human, and that is where our mind and memory are. So that is the ethereal factor. Ethereal factor cannot be seen. It doesn't have any taste. It doesn't carry any sound. It doesn't have any touch. The next step is the aerial factor. It doesn't have any sight, cannot be seen. It doesn't have any taste, but it has touch. If you do this, if you wave your hand in the air, you can feel there is air. Visually, you don't see it, but it has touch. The luminous factor, fire, can be seen, it has touch, but it doesn't have any taste, and it doesn't carry sound. That is why we see the fire of that candle has, that is why we see that the fire of that candle has sight. It has touch. We can touch the fire. Of course, because fire is on the brink between the manifested and unmanifested, the seen and unseen universe, the moment we see it, it vanishes right to the unseen universe. We see it, and a moment later, we don't see it. The fourth level is the liquid factor. It has sight, it has touch, it carries sound, but it is not completely solid. It has taste and all the elements of the solid. The fifth one is the solid factor, which has all the elements. As the universe became crudified, it carried more factors, such as touch, smell, visibility, etc., related to them. So in the first level, God created those five elements. In the second level, he created the creation, universes, solar systems, etc. And eventually God decided, let us make man in our image. We were created in God's image. What does image mean? Image means likeness. We are in the likeness of God. What is God? God is consciousness and the three creative forces. Also, God is the whole universe, isn't he? He's ethereal, aerial, luminous, liquid, and solid factors, which we also are. We have consciousnesses. We have consciousness, like God. We have the three gunas in our body as our mind, which also God has, which is in the universal mind. We have the mind, which is the three creative forces in the universe. We also have ethereal, liquid, aerial, and solid factors, and everything that God has. Then we also have psychic centers in our body, which are called chakras. There are seven chakras in us, and there are seven levels in the universe, which are called lokas, or worlds. Since the first five chakras separate us from the universe, or shield us from the external world, they are called sheaths, or koshas. All of these are related to the universal lokas, or worlds. So we are completely a universe in ourselves. Completely. We are a manifestation, a minute of possibilities. A minute of possibilities. Not sure which that is. And we can realize the cosmos by just looking at ourselves. We are created in the image of God. Of course, God is God, and we are God, with a small g. Question. Isn't it written that we are in the image and likeness of God? Maitreya's answer. And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. Genesis 1:26. Question. What's the difference between image and likeness? Maitreya. It's the same thing. Question. Because in French, it's not written like this. It's to our image and like him. And likeness, they say two things. They say image and resemblance. I was always wondering why they say two things, image and resemblance. Maitreya, that's exactly what it means, our image after our likeness. Question. Why is it not just said in our image? Maitreya, the Bible does that. That is how God reveals his revelation. He repeats himself many times so you understand it better. If you didn't understand it the first time, maybe you will a second time. If not the second time, maybe the third time or the fourth time. Image is the same thing as likeness. If you do not understand image, you may understand likeness, etc. Even though some people say is so repetitive, it repeats itself again and again and again. But it really doesn't repeat itself. You look at the same thing in a different way, that really means the same thing, at the same time, from a different angle. So image really means likeness. It's the same thing. When you take a picture of yourself, it is in your image. At the same time, it is like you, there is a likeness. But your picture is not you, you are different. Audience. But it's hard sometimes. When you extract from the Bible and English, we're not used to this terminology. I always translate in French with the Bible, but in Quebec and the Catholic Church, we are not used to reading the Bible. The people are not used to reading the Bible. Maitreya, well, when you read the Bible, you know the truth. Audience, this is why they didn't like us to read the Bible. Question. Really, consciousnesses are human beings mainly, or are animals included? Maitreya, they are animals too. Actually, uniconsciousnesses are all over. They are everything. There are more unmanifested than manifested. Question. An animal is a unit consciousness? Maitreya, yes, but it is in a lower level of energy. Question. And a tree? Maitreya, a tree also. That's why we need an evolutionary process, so they evolve. Our lower chakras are our animal part. The animals were already created. In the 24th verse in Genesis it says, "And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature." The living creatures were before humans. Animals also have chakras, but their chakras are much less evolved, are in a lower level than ours. Animals are more in their lower chakras. There are very low animals and there are high animals. There are very low humans and there are high humans. Even sometimes there is overlapping. Some humans are even less than animals. An animal can only kill one animal at a time. A human can kill millions of humans or animals at a time. Which one is worse? The one who kills only one animal at one time, or the one who kills many animals or many humans? So see, there is an overlap in creation. All things have to evolve and eventually reach pure consciousness. There are unit consciousnesses which are so evolved that they can be called gods with a small g, avatars. Question. Do humans ever go back to being animals in some circumstances? Maitreya, you mean transmigration? Well, it is possible. God can do whatever he wants to, but it's rare. It's very rare. Any progress you make in the spiritual level stays with you. That is the only progress that stays with you. Anything physical, material, or mental, you have to leave behind. The only thing you take with you is your spirit and soul. The only thing that really stays with you when you leave your body is your spiritual progress. So God created humans. Now what? Now we created humans and they're going to be pretty nice people and follow exactly what I say. All laughing. And he said, do this, do that, do not do this. This is good for you, and that's the way you progress to pure consciousness. Don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's what it meant. If you do these things, if you follow the 15 commandments, you're going to reach there. If you do the 33 virtues, follow the eternal divine path, that's good for you. That's how your spirit grows in you, how the animal part in you diminishes by being and following those things that are good for spirit. The animal part of us wants things, desires things. It looks good to us, so it seems good to do. It seems so good to go to a bar and have a couple of drinks for some people, or have a handsome boyfriend or a beautiful girlfriend, or have beautiful food, eat a lot of meaty food, and drink a lot of whiskey and gin, etc. Whatever seems good, that is the way a lot of people think it should be. Or, if I can get anything from my neighbor, let me get it. If I can step over the head of other people and climb my way to the top, I will do it. That's our animal part. That's what I say looks good. And it looks good to the society, too. Society tells us you have to buy this, you have to eat this, you have to go on this vacation, you have to do that, 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 and that, then you're okay. You do all these things, and at the end you see you're still not okay. What happened? I thought this was going to make me okay or happy, but I'm not. But God told them, don't eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Do not be deceived by your senses. Looks good. Be God-conscious and follow his ways. This is what is good for you. But the lower nature, which is symbolized as Eve or woman here, tells the higher nature, man, it's okay if you do it, to eat of the tree. You will know better. You will become God. However, that is the false ego which is talking. We cannot become God by following our own will, but by following his will. In order to become in his image or likeness, we have to follow his footsteps, his laws. If we follow our will, our senses, then we really are following our will, not his. You are saying, my will be done, not God's will be done. So she said, okay, let's do it. What happened was they fell from being God-conscious to self-conscious. The moment you fall from God-consciousness to self-consciousness, you fall from what? You fall from the grace. And what is heaven? What is the Garden of Eden? The Garden of Eden is bliss, is grace. The moment you are in grace, you know you are in the presence of God. You are okay. You don't need all those things. You don't even need society to tell you you are okay. You are okay, okay? You are okay as you are. You are in the presence of God. You are God-centered, God-conscious. It is then you become God, with a small g, an avatar. It is then that you do his will, not yours. It is then that you are truly in his image and likeness. You will not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You do not trust yourself, but your spirit, which is God. However, the lower nature of the man said, you shouldn't worry about what God told you. Do whatever I tell you. I'll take care of God. So they did eat. The higher nature did what the lower nature said. Then God came. According to the Bible, they were naked and weren't ashamed because they had no consciousness of the body. They were completely in God consciousness. They had no awareness they had a body, so they weren't ashamed at all. The higher self is one with God. The Atman or soul is one with God. The soul really knows. In reality, being naked here means being innocent in God. If you do something bad, you feel guilty right away. You lose the innocence in you. It doesn't matter if anyone is looking or not, God is looking. You think he's not there, but he is there anyway. You're going to feel guilty right away. And that's what happened to the higher self. He felt guilty. And God came and said, "Where are you? I always came to you, and you always were there. You weren't ashamed. You never hid from me." Adam said, "I am naked." God said, "Who told you you were naked? You never felt, you never knew you were naked. You never had any awareness of your body. How come you now say you are naked?" Man felt guilty. God said, "Did you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil?" God knew it right away. You see, man felt guilty. He should have done something he told him not to do, and he did. Now he had the awareness of guilt, and he fell to his lower nature. He became aware of his own separate existence, of his body, of his nakedness. So God said, "Did you eat of the tree?" Man said, "I didn't do it. The lower nature told me to do it." The lower nature said, "But I didn't do it. The serpent did it." The serpent said, "No, I fear you, God. I'm not the person who did it. See, even the serpent fears God." God said, "Okay, now you have done this, you will suffer for it." That's the whole story of the fall of man. But we are still doing it. It's okay, I'm going to do it. No one's around, so I can do it. Inside ourselves, our soul doesn't grow up. Our soul stays low. That joy, that grace, is not flowing enough because we think we can fool God, and really we are fooling ourselves. As I said, if God says, "Do this," he doesn't care if you do it or not. Actually, he laughs at you when you don't do it because he says, "Hey, look, I already told you this is the way you can receive the grace. This is the way you can enter the heaven or the Garden of Eden. And then you trade such a wonderful grace, such a wonderful, amazing grace for the little things you want in life, and you fall." Okay, they fell. Then what happened? Then they had to till the ground with the sweat of their brow and the toil of their hands. This really means they fell from the grace. But humans didn't have complete human bodies yet. They didn't have the body we have. Still, they were pretty much etheric beings, very etheric, flowing beings. They were actually more spirit than human as we are. That is when God gave them a body and skin, and they began to look very much like us, but still much more spirit. This is getting into a whole nother section, and it's almost 8:30, so I think I will stop here and let the next reader go. Thanks, God. Salam.